You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 7th, 2024, and bust out those Buster Swords. It's time to be reborn.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
And this is a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. Woo! We've been out sick.
Just like the beats in Final Fantasy VII Reborn.
We've been sick nasty.
Yeah, we've just been just sick. Sick.
Yeah, man, when it rains, it pours. You know what I mean? It's been a rough couple of weeks.
We've been exposed to Mako, actually. Now we can wield...
Yeah, too much has gotten into our bloodstream. We're back. We're still a little bit sick, so forgive us for any weird sounds we make. But while we've been out, we have been playing some video games, which includes Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. The demo came out shortly before the full launch. Both of us have jumped into the full game, as well as a handful of other titles. You know, it's funny. We were talking about this, I think, in text. But man, like, when you're young and sick, you don't quite realize how glorious it is to be able to spend all fucking day playing video games. And as an adult, you're either working and sick, especially if you're like me, where you're working fully remote.
Yep.
You're just sick and working. Or if you have kids who are also sick, you're just taking care of sick kids or taking care of kids who aren't sick and you're sick.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, you know who super doesn't give a shit when you're sick? The children.
Yes, exactly. One day I'll be able to be like, look, I feel like crap, let me just go downstairs and play video games. And they'll be like, no problem, dad. Like, that's the dream, you know.
And they'll be like, nope, I'm gonna take that Steam Deck from you. Yoinks.
I just want to live like it's the mid-90s again, you know what I mean?
Well, you're in luck, because we're playing Final Fantasy VII.
Very good point. Let's say Final Fantasy VII for the end, I guess.
Let's
talk about some of the other games we've been playing. Do you want to start? Do you want me to start?
You can start. I feel like you have one extra. I played a little bit of another game.
Great. So I have been playing... Well, I'll be quick about it, because there's two games that I've been playing, but I've kind of only dipped my toes into a little bit. The first is a big one. I'll talk about it. Helldivers 2. I have been playing. Man, this game took the world by storm. Back away, pal world. Helldivers 2 is here.
I was going to play it, and then I got busy and got sick, and then I was like, well, actually, I'm going to wait another week, because you literally couldn't get online. It was so popular.
Yeah.
Like, they had just, I mean, it's a crazy great problem to have, I suppose, but like, they were just looking at the devs' tweets and everything, like, they were frazzled.
It's also crazy to me how quickly so many of their players became really entitled and angry about these issues.
Like,
the game just came out. Cut them some slack, you know?
I know. And it's a small team, too. I feel like it's, you know, it's what? I don't know, probably a couple hundred people that work there, if that.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, I've been dipping my toes into that. It is following the same trend that I've already discussed on the show. The successful recipe to a game is X plus co-op multiplayer.
I know.
That's what Helldivers 2 is. With some interesting, like, I don't know if you could quite call it a strand game, but some interesting elements added to the mix.
There's like a meta campaign, right? Like a world at war type of thing.
So not just that. So let me just give you like some background, because I don't know how much you've checked it out.
Mm.
From a tone perspective, and the reason you're seeing so many memes about Helldivers 2 is it really leans into Starship Troopers as a meme, right? Like, as a satire. It is a great piece of satire. You know, you're fighting bugs, but it's not just that. Like, the tutorial is this over-the-top sort of bombastic, we can't wait to send you to the front line, soldier.
Right.
Like, and no propaganda. Matter what you do. Yeah, full propaganda. No matter what you do, they're, like, super supportive. I was cracking up laughing because I was in the game shooting some bugs with a couple of friends, and the barks from your character as bugs are swarming her is like, you'll never take my way of life from me.
Right.
You know, like, they're bugs. There's like, they don't care about your way of life at all, but it has to be ideological. Like, that layer, that humor works really, really well in that context.
Yeah.
And that And it works, funnily enough, with this added layer as well, because yes, there's this secondary story where you're freeing specific planets based upon the number of actual players who are partaking in missions on those planets. And so you can kind of rally around your people like, yeah, we did this for democracy, you know, right. Or something stupid like that. It totally works. There's also like great humor stuff like when you die and respawn, your character does not come back. You just get another grunt. Yeah, you just get another grunt ready to die. Like your voice, the model changes, the voice actor changes when you die.
That's great.
Which is like such a hilarious like note of like, hey, this isn't a hero simulator. You are just you're just lambs for the slaughter in this scenario, great. Which is so funny. And in addition to the sort of secondary world map gameplay side of things, there is also co-op. You can also employ what are called stratagems that will call in aid. So kind of like if you remember the Blue Phantoms from the Dark Souls series.
Yes.
There's a similar mechanic to that as well. So not only can you join your friends and play, you could join randoms to play, but you can also call for help to be summoned into your world as well.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. I think by far the coolest mechanic or the neatest mechanic, and it's going to sound dumb and it's, I'm going to try to sell you on it, but there's basically, they basically inserted QuickTime events into everything that you do except for shooting. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Like I've heard about this, like when you're trying to call down a strike or like unlock something or whatever. Yeah.
Right. So all of these things are called stratagems, right? You have you can bring a set of four stratagems to the table as well as a couple of universal ones. But if you want to say call in a turret or call in resupplies or call in an airdrop, you have to input a QuickTime event. It's a very short and simple one. Up, down, left, right. And there you go. You've activated it. But let me tell you, when you were being swarmed by bugs or defending yourself against robots, your friend is dead, and so you're desperately trying to input the correct code and panicking, and you're also trying to run away and fire at the same time. It adds this degree of stress and anxiety and controlled chaos that is just, it's just chef's kiss. It's so beautiful that something as dumb and simple as just input five directional keys adds this layer of panic and tension. It just works so wonderfully, and you fuck it up inevitably and panic some more and you die in a hilarious way. And it is just a great like storytelling system despite seeing being so simple.
Yeah. I'm probably going to loop back around to it at some point now that things are a little bit more stable and like, I'm hopefully going to have a little bit more time here in the future, but it's also just, I don't know. It's kind of a feel good story really. Like there's just a small team, total unexpected breakout hit.
Well, and there's going to be legs on this thing. Like they already have a battle pass. There's a lot of depth already. Like the number of stratagems that you can unlock is quite high.
Right.
And there's different armor and weapons that you can use. And you could really especially start to understand how, you know, if you wanted to really tackle this game at its hardest difficulty, unlocking and working with a team could actually be super rewarding, right? Like you could be kind of build a support class and an artillery class, and you could each choose stratagems based upon what the rest of your party has and your weapons and your missions that you're going to take on. That degree of forethought that goes into really high level play, I think will give this game a lot of long-term success. There's, I almost get like Destiny vibes with the sort of potential that this world represents. So I think that's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You want me to talk about the other one or do you want to,
Yeah, no, I'll go real quick on Mario versus Donkey Kong. You heard about these new up and coming characters, Mario and Donkey Kong?
Well, I saw them in the movie, and I know they have beef. So you know.
They do. They've had beef since the early '80s.
It's just a misunderstanding, right? Like they clearly could be best pals.
I mean, if they just talked it out, you know, which I guess was kind of the lesson of the movie. But like in this game, they have certainly not talked it out. So weirdly enough, I never played it, but there was a 1994 video game, a Donkey Kong video game that was basically the inspiration for this game that was then turned into Mario versus Donkey Kong in 2004, which was then basically remade into this game. So there's like somewhat of a weird lineage to this thing, but it's basically a puzzle platformer where there's a locked door, there's a key in the level, and then you need to figure out kind of an order of operations thing where, you know, in order to get the key, you need to like move this trash can to step on this switch to start the platform moving to then get to the top and grab the key.
Yeah.
So it's less of a action platformer and more of a order of operations, like puzzle platformer. So far I've only done a few levels and I'm going to play with the kids basically, since it's a two player. And there's something nice. Interesting with a two player actually I should talk about, so far it's been pretty cool, like pretty charming, like very bite-sized levels, like single screen sort of thing.
That's neat. Yeah, I'm watching the trailer right now. Is it challenging or do you feel like it's pretty easy so far?
I mean, so far it's easy. Excuse me, but it's gonna, like, I've seen some of the later levels and it starts to layer on stuff to it. And you know, there's some good stuff where like if you're playing two players, some parts get easier because you can boost each other up. Someone can jump on the other person to like boost up to another platform that otherwise the first player may have just by themselves would have just had a harder time getting up to.
Yeah.
But they put an extra key in the level, so you actually have to get two keys in order to
unlock the door. Really interesting. Yeah. And are there moments where you have to like separate? Because that was always something that's really interesting to me, is the asymmetric puzzle. And it feels like an untapped potential. Like there's really interesting stuff there. I played all of the series called We Were Here, or We Were Here Together, and so on and so forth,
right.
Which is a 3D asymmetric two-player co-op puzzle game.
Yeah.
And they're not very good. Like they suffice, right. But like the honest truth is, despite playing all of them, they're not very well made. You know, like you can feel that being the case. But nevertheless, I love the idea of like, okay, we both have to figure this out together. We have to separate. Sometimes I have to activate something so that you can activate something so that I can access this thing. Like that's a cool kind of fun interaction, especially with the kid. I imagine that's pretty cool.
That could and the game is such that it's relatively chill. You know, like you're not going to be, you know, it's not like it's not like the special world of Mario Wonder or something. Like there's not like that level of intensity to the action. So I'm probably going to keep playing it. But it's one of those just like, okay, this is like a pleasant afternoon type of game that has been nice to dig into.
Yeah, that's sweet. Cool. Okay, last game before Final Fantasy VII I'll talk about real quick. Void Crew. This is another co-op game that is basically Star Trek in space.
Wait, Star Trek's already in space.
Yeah, that's true. I guess. Double space.
The final frontier.
I guess my point is like you're not really ever just chilling on your ship. You know what I mean? Like you're on your ship, but it's not, you know.
You're never playing your trombone in 10 forward.
Yeah, exactly. You're not chilling on 10 forward. There's not like a whole, you know, cast of NPCs. You're not walking around in a world. You're exclusively in space, I should say. This is a small indie game. It's currently in early access, but I do want to shout out it because I think it's pretty cool. The basic idea is almost like a Sea of Thieves, but in space. So you have your own spaceship. It's not, there's no multiplayer in terms of like PvP multiplayer, but you can have up to four people on your ship. Right. And that will determine what kind of ship you have. And all of the actions that you can take on your ship have to be manned. So you will go on missions like, they're mostly combat missions. Maybe you are, you know, uploading or downloading some data and you have to protect the satellite while enemies swarm around you. But someone needs to pilot the ship, right? And that person will have a particular perspective. So I'll be able to look from my cockpit and scan things. I could be in third person, see my ship and sort of navigate around missiles and move things around. There also needs to be someone sitting on a gun, so they'll be in their gun. But there also needs to be an engineer who will be sort of trimming the engine in order to give me more mobility, or patching hull breaches, or reloading ammo in some of the weapons. Sometimes they have to leave the ship. Like, you actually have to get out of the ship to repair a hull breach on the outside or take on some mission.
Yeah.
And they're running out of oxygen. And so I might need to, like, go and attack some things and then come back and pick them up. And I've been playing the pilot role. And, man, it is just really exciting to work as a team and be shouting out orders Star Trek-wise of, like, hey, like, I need this and I need that. And we all kind of have access to the same degree of data. But in order for the ship to hum, you kind of all need to be on the top of your game, right? Like, I'm flying the ship, but I know that, like, I need someone to move the shields to the right of the ship because I see there's, like, a sniper class on the farther side. Now, this is another scenario where kind of like the We Were Here series. It honestly, it's early access. You can tell it's early access. It's not that good. There's a lot of growth and systems to build. And I think it's being made by functionally like a handful of people.
Sure.
Cool. Yeah, it looks cool. But one day, I just feel like there's so much potential around asymmetric multiplayer games. And it's not enough like big budgets are going towards them or bigger budgets. I think one day someone's going to unlock it. Like we're going to get a, you know, Helldivers 2 version or like a AA version of this idea. And it's going to be awesome because it has to be, right? Like the fantasy of being on a ship and working as a crew, it just feels right. Ever since watching Star Trek or playing like Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, like there's these classic games where, you know, they're small, they're indie, so they're never at that scale that I feel like we're almost to. I really just want to be at the big scale of manning that crew as a crew. Void Crew gets pretty close, so shout out to that. It's a cool game.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Shall we talk about the behemoth?
Yeah. Yes.
That's my favorite summon.
Bahamut. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So in preparation to this, I listened to almost all of our original Final Fantasy VII debrief. Uh-huh. I think like three or four episodes of five. Yep. I watched an hour and 45 minute recap, and then I re-listened to our Final Fantasy VII remake debrief as well. Man.
Well, I mean, like, and that's like only a portion of what you could be doing, because like you could be fucking watching Crisis Core and like all Advent Children and all that shit. You know, like it's just crazy how much lore there is.
Suffice it to say, I'm very hyped getting into Final Fantasy VII. I did play the demo. The demo is interesting. I really like this idea of having a demo that you could then load kind of into your save file to skip a section of the game.
Yeah,
it does not skip the worst part of the demo.
It skips it in the most like Squaresoft way possible. Like it's so funny how they implemented that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second. But anyway, suffice it to say, play the demo, play a little bit of the game. Neither of us are very far. I think we're both kind of just now entered the space that fully becomes the open world.
Yeah,
that is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. But I think so far, so okay. I think it's my perspective. What are your thoughts?
I feel like I need to get my Final Fantasy sea legs back.
Yes. Yeah.
They throw you into this game with five characters.
Have you played all of the tutorials that Chadley has offered?
I've played most of them, but I went through them and I was like, oh, right, this mechanic. And like, oh, that's how Red 13's attack works. I forgot about that shit. And some of it is different. And that comes late.
Like you don't access Chadley until, you know, not deep into the game, but after many fights.
Yeah, exactly. Like at least like, I don't know, 1 or 2 hours into the game. Like, I mean,
what a chat.
And the other thing too, is I remember they have actually changed some of the mechanics where it's like Cloud has his, like, if you dodge and then attack, he starts doing a whole different set of attacks that just didn't exist in the first game.
Yeah.
And so, and then like some of Tifa's attacks work differently and there's this whole like synergy. Yeah. There's, like, I was playing it and Hana was sitting next to me and she was just like kind of like looking at the screen with like a raised eyebrow, and I was like, this is a whole lot of video game. Like this is just a lot of video game right here. Like there's systems upon systems in this thing,
and the UI is quite full, right? Like the synergy one in particular, because you need to keep track of these tiny little bars.
Yeah, these little pips that are in there.
Dude, like, there's so much going on screen because combat is very fast paced and enemies will just charge you. I also find it really difficult to juggle aggro in these early stages. So no matter who I'm switching to, people are just fucking coming at me. And so I'm doing attacks. I'm switching characters all the time. I never think to look in the bottom right corner where there's these three little dots that tell me that if I hold this button, I can do this thing. Like, it is complex. The tutorial helped a lot after playing through it, but there is a lot going on very quickly.
Well, and also just like the nuances of the characters, where it's like, oh right, if I you know, perfect block with Red 13, he'll counterattack, and you know, oh, I forget, that's how, you know, Tifa's focus attacks, if you do one of her triangle attacks on a staggered enemy, it puts a damage multiplier onto it, which like really lets you start melting enemies like very fast. And so, but like all that stuff is just so dense. Yeah. I mean, you really just have to immerse yourself into this game to start being proficient at the combat.
I kind of wish that they had given us more. There's a materia, I forget what it's called, auto use or something like that for a materia.
Oh yeah, autocast, I think.
Autocast, which when attached to spells or abilities, it allow that person to sort of automatically cast them, even when you're not controlling them. I think having more of those earlier on would have been a strong suit, because what I find is that once I did the tutorial in particular, there were a couple of characters that I really enjoy the mechanics of that particular character.
Yeah.
And it's much more satisfying to me. So Tifa's an example. I think Tifa's mechanics are really enjoyable. Like, she's just fun.
It's super fun to play. Yeah.
Super fun to play, because it feels like you're in and out. You're dodging all of the time. Like, and she gets bonuses when you dodge. And dodging also opens up multiplayer hits. And like, there's a lot of risk reward of like her wind up punch is really cool. Like, from a combat minute to minute perspective, Tifa's a blast. But there's so much going on, and I feel so obligated to swap between all of them. Whereas I think if they had given us more autocast earlier, I'd feel a little bit better about my party being able to handle what's coming and letting me focus on sort of mastering one character at a time.
Yep. Yeah. And it's chock full of that stuff too. Like, every character has some sort of like hidden depth where it's like, oh, that's how that works. Or if I cast this thing, it increases their defense, which prevents them from getting staggered, which then helps me charge up the ATB thing faster, and like blah blah blah. And like,
or like Aerith, like I need to gain ATB, use ability to drop a ward that then lets me cast double spells. I can drop another ward later on, and I can teleport between my wards. Like, most fights are over before that degree of fourth round. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like there you have so many tools. But combat is so frenetic that I feel like I'm constantly on the back foot. And I'm actually really looking forward to a boss fight, because it feels like a boss fight is where I can kind of stretch my muscles a little bit. I enjoyed the tutorial because it felt contained and well-paced. But encountering enemies in the middle of nowhere, like, I don't see them all the time. I wish auto-lock was turned on. Maybe that's something I could turn on automatically or something.
There's a ton of options. Like, so I'm messing around with the camera. Like, there's options in the system settings to, like, zoom the camera further out, which I've actually enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, although it's not granular. It's like 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah. It would be nice to have like a slider, but it's just kind of a three-part thing. But yeah, I mean, it's the thing about it is that it's so funny. It's like they just kind of assume, it feels like, and sometimes games do this, It feels like they assume that you just finished playing Final Fantasy VII Remake last week.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're just going to give you this with like a pretty full set of abilities, a pretty full set of characters, and we're just going to kind of start the game. And like, they didn't even start with a thing where it's like, oh, it's just Cloud by himself, and then he meets back up with Aerith or whatever. I mean, it's just, you just get into it pretty fast for an RPG. And it's dense, and that applies to everything. I mean, like the menus, the weapon augment systems, the ability augment systems, all that stuff is just like many menus to navigate through. Yeah. And it's all good stuff. I think the systems are actually very impressive, and the everything works together very impressively. It's just a lot at the very beginning.
Yeah, agreed. Is there anything that like struck you as surprising or cool in those first early hours?
I mean, I was wondering how they were going to do this. And I kind of got a hint of it, because I also played, they added to the demo before the game came out. They added the Junon region.
Yes. So I skipped that because I heard that playing it you can't pass it in your
correct
save file.
It's a bespoke demo that it's like slightly different from the main game.
Yeah, my concern was it would be spoilery, but what was that like?
Well, that was the thing that kind of clued me into what sort of game it was, and then when I played the game, it became even more clear. Where once you get out of the first town, once you get out of Calm, it is kind of an open world game down to the point where you're climbing towers to open up points on the map. And I'm like, it's one of those, like, I've been here before. I've climbed towers to put dots on a map before. Like, okay, this is the type of game that they're going for this time. which was quite different from the first game, which was much more, you know, corridor and like scenario based. Even the open parts of Remake were very, very linear.
Yeah. It makes me a little bit nervous, to be honest. I think there's a lot of open world games that can just feel bloated. Like there's just a lot of stuff, a lot of like really gamey things.
Oh yeah.
Sort of fall out of that.
There's a whole, so I mean, hey, it's 2024, so you know there's a crafting system.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Things like that. But I mean, even like side quests that become bloated or like a lot of backtracking, I don't know. I mean, it always just makes me extra on my toes.
Right.
And it's not something we've seen in the franchise before, so I have concerns that it will become a kind of a bloated mess. I'm also really hoping that I can focus on the main storyline and not feel too distracted by what is, I'm sure, a boatload of content out in the open world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like what I've seen so far from opening up the first couple towers and the Junon region demo, like there's just going to be a lot of stuff out there in the open world. And I admire them for doing something a little bit different and just seeing how they tell this story, because that this is kind of where in the original, you know, in the original Final Fantasy VII, this is where the game opened up. You know, you spent those first 5 hours in Midgar, and then all of a sudden you get to the overworld and the game changes a little bit. And so this is just like an entire game to that effect.
Yeah, it just actually puts things in the world. Whereas Final Fantasy VII was just like an empty landscape.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed the flashback sequence. It was just a cool way to start the game, especially because we ended Final Fantasy VII Remake on a feeling of like I was lost. I didn't know where this game was going to go.
Yep.
And so I think that they made a good call when they said, well, let's just go back to what people know, right? Which is to say this classic flashback scene complete with going into Tifa's house, looking into her closet.
Playing the piano.
Yeah, playing the piano. Like all that stuff I thought worked really, really well. I think the scene with Sephiroth, the Sephiroth content is good, but the scene with Sephiroth where he goes apeshit, I thought was actually worse than the original version.
Right. Yeah.
There's this moment. Well, there are a couple of reasons. One is they make you do that egregiously long crawl.
Oh my God. And before that, you're like limping for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you're crawling. And the crawl too is worse because you have to watch these motherfucking people hold, like five dudes are holding guns on Sephiroth. And look, it's not going to work anyway. Like the guy's a god at this point. Like there's nothing you can do. But they never fire a bullet. Like I just don't. It just makes no sense. They each wait to at least run away. Throw your gun on the ground and run away. It's ludicrous, right? Here's the other thing. So when you play the demo, that's where the demo ends, right?
Yeah.
When you jump into the real game, you still have to play the sequence, but there's more content and important story content after where you had already seen. So the first time I did it, I skipped the cutscene before I realizing, wait, I missed out on
like
more
when he attacks
content.
Tifa and all that.
Yeah, when he attacks Tifa, the whole sequence with in the Genova lab, like all of that stuff is not in the demo, right? So I didn't think it was in the main game. When I realized it was in the main game and that I had to replay that whole fucking sequence
again. Oh my God.
So I played the demo, I played that sequence, and then I played that sequence again. So three times I had to crawl and watch these people do their thing. It was so infuriating to me.
That's just meant to like get you, you know, just as mad as they are about Sephiroth.
I think the thing that is unfortunate about that flashback and the way that they give you more Sephiroth is that Sephiroth is such a mystery character in the first game. Like, you've barely seen him. You really haven't seen him up until this point, right? Like,
Because you're just, like, chasing him in Midgar, I think.
Yeah, like, in Remake, you fight him. Like, it is a thing, right? He's a big deal. But there's this moment that is so iconic in my mind, despite the admittedly poorly aged graphics, of the sort of entity that is Sephiroth being on the periphery of my vision, and then seeing him appear in the fire and then like walk, almost fade away into the background. That to me is so evocative. And I actually rewatched that sequence after it, and it is still super evocative, despite the graphics, despite the perspective. Yeah. There's just something chilling about the otherworldly presence there. Watching him one by one kill those dudes And it's going to sound really nitpicky, but the way that he's standing in front of the fire and not inside of the fire, right. I think just saps that scene right. of the mysterious power that Sephiroth brings in right. that moment in the game. So like, I genuinely think that they kind of did a poor job by giving us more content than they should have done in terms of like holding back some of that more iconic moments.
It does because they incorporate so much of the original game. It actually does give me a newfound respect for that original game, because that game was going for so much, you know, just from like a storytelling perspective and from a presentation perspective. It was swinging for something bigger than what it could even do technologically, which is even more impressive in retrospect.
Yep. Yeah.
And now that they have the technology to tell the story, it makes me admire that first game even more, because it's like, wow, you were really going for something in this game where you were straining the limits of what you could present and like do it in a coherent way. And even now it's hard to do it in a coherent way, and let alone back when they were trying to do it in 97 or whatever.
Absolutely.
I agree. But I mean, you know, on the positive side, it also gives me the care and attention and the love they have for this world, is very high. Because they do translate a lot of that old stuff into a new and kind of remade, slightly reimagined world where you just get a little bit more color. Like they talk about the Republic before Shinra got super powerful, and you're like, oh yeah, I can kind of see that. Like there's architecture and there's, you know, ruins and, you know, you just get a little bit more of that pre-Shinra world, which I always appreciated. And then I think they just do a lot with the soundtrack too. I mean, man, is there such a thing as hyper orchestration? You know, like this game is like, they're just going so ham on the music at all times in this game.
Yeah. Do you think it's too much or you like it?
I mean, I think it's melodramatic in the most literal sense of the word, where like they are amping up the drama via the music.
Yeah.
The music is amazing. And the themes.
It always has been, you know?
Yeah, it always has been. And now they're just like, we're going to make this music as big as possible at all times. And I like it a lot, but it's just, it's almost, you get almost like a Baz Luhrmann vibe from it, where it's like, it's just kind of like hyper, you know, like, wow, this music is really front and center at all times, which is cool. But you know, it feels like it's even more so than in that first game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although, I mean, again, that Chocobo music slaps so hard. I would just listen to that jam all day. Yeah.
The remixes, like, but that's the thing. Like they're even willing to mess with styles and, you know, then go back to the more operatic, like Final Fantasy VII main theme, all that stuff. I mean, it's great. The Red 13 theme is amazing as always. Yes. Like it's just all of that stuff is great. And I mean, well, and
I'm sure it's going to get even more melodramatic. Like all the Sephiroth stuff is just so over the, even in the original, it was over the top.
For sure. I mean, I haven't gotten to the point in the game where we'll see what they do with the story and with the split timeline, because they open the game with the sequence of Zack and him going into Midgar. So they're already in the early hours setting up a parallel timeline that's happening.
Yeah. So what is this all about? Like, did I miss something? Because he's with Aerith in the beginning.
Correct.
And they crash the ship. So like what's that?
Someone all about? Will correct me about this, but my recollection is that at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, there's basically a by fighting Sephiroth and going against fate, you've basically broken one timeline.
And I guess in my assumption, you broke your own timeline. I didn't think that we would spend time in two different timelines, but I think you're right. Like the presence of Zack with Red and Aerith,
that
feels separate, and that was what was throwing me off.
I don't remember if this happened in the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake or an intermission. Did you play intermission? That was the DLC to that first game.
No, I did not. No,
it might have happened in intermission, but at some point there was a cutscene where Zack is, and they reveal this before Final Fantasy Rebirth, where Zack is fighting a bunch of Shinra soldiers and carrying an injured Cloud back to Midgar. And in Final Fantasy VII, the original game, that's where Zack dies.
Yes, yes.
That I remember. And so in the remake games, he survives. And so Cloud and Tifa and Aerith and all of them, they break fate by facing Sephiroth and leaving Midgar. But then at the same time, there's this other broken timeline where Zack survives. And now there's like a split timeline of like, you know, one timeline where Zack apparently has probably died, since Cloud obviously is from the first game, you know, is living a false life as Zack.
Yeah.
And then there's this other timeline where Zack survives. And so like, what's going to happen there? So who knows? I don't know how they're going to split that stuff together, but like, clearly they're not shying away from it.
Yeah, I'm interested if it's largely just going to be like cutscenes for now.
Yeah.
Or if there's going to be moments where you're like playing as Zack, you know? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Because they did that in the very beginning. Like, you have some fight scenes as Zack, so clearly the systems are in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Huh. Interesting stuff. Well, yeah, I'm still excited to see where it goes. I think there's some good chances. Before we wrap, what do you think of Queen's Gambit? Is it Queen's Gambit? God. No. It's Queen. What is it called?
Queen's Blood.
Queen's Blood. Man.
I got so mad at the NPCs that I was like, oh my God, you motherfucker. Like, I was like hard restarting sometimes, or I was like, God damn it. Like, I know I'm already losing, so like, I'm just going to start this game again.
Hacks. Yeah, man, this is why I hate these types of minigames, because I get sucked into them. There's no doubt in my mind, I'm going to fucking play this. Like, I'm going to play it. I'm going to be one of those idiots who goes around and has to fight every single person and like, you know, get all the decks together. And then just so I can unlock some like shitty materia that summons a chessboard or something, you know, like, it's bad.
This is where I wish we would revive the fantasy of the second screen. Like, they should just have put this out as an app.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And like you play Queen's Blood on your phone and you log into your account, and then the rewards show up in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, you know?
Yeah, that would be interesting, like a secondary game on top of it that you can play.
Totally. I mean, it's the same thing when I was playing Starfield Sky, Wheels. They had a great in-game dice game, and it's like, I wish this was just a phone game that like linked into the video game, so I could do both, you know?
I'm already playing Marvel Snap a lot. You know what I mean? Keep it in Final Fantasy VII, I say.
I mean, but think of how much money Squaresoft could make selling like booster packs and stuff. I mean, like, it's crazy. Like, they're leaving money on the table by not monetizing this thing.
Well, they tried it with Gwent. You know what I mean? That didn't pan out. So.
Oh my God, Gwent. Yeah, but anyway, I'm. It's and like even that, it's like kind of like, there's so many different, like, you can have like, I don't know how many different pre-built decks or whatever that you can, so you can like swap between different builds and loadouts and stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's just nuts.
Yeah. There's a lot of game here. I think this is going to be a gamiest game contender.
Yeah. It's an early front runner.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll check back in 40 hours when we're, you know, done or halfway done with it.
Yeah. How long is this game? Did you know?
I feel like it's long.
Oh man. I know. It's going to take me a while.
I mean, you know, and that's, I'm not calculating becoming a Queen's Blood master in that calculation.
Yeah, exactly. That's gonna be extra time.
All right, well, we need to get back to it then. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, leave us a review, and tell a friend.
All right, until next time, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Every time we disagree, there's a place you go to, because I